Hey, good morning. This is the inaugural podcast for the Your Florida Business Broker podcast. My name is Mike Shea, and I'm hoping on this platform to put out some content and some information to help business owners, both those who buy companies and sell companies, to get a little bit of information about how it actually gets done. Because oftentimes, just yesterday indeed, I came across somebody in an accountant's office who had paid a bunch of money to someone to give him a valuation. And, quite frankly, that's like, paying someone to tell them what you want to hear, not what you need to hear. And that was exactly what was occurring. So we're going to cover a ton of topics, the fundamentals and the basics that are required for business owners, both buyers and sellers, to understand, because they don't change no matter who you are. And we'll talk about small business, middle market, and M&A transactions and the differences between them and the nuances that are required from the parties involved in those types of transactions. So today's topic, we're going to talk about valuation and terminology associated with valuation, and some of this will be directed specifically to what terms we use here in Florida. But the concepts are consistent across the world. So let's start with this, and we'll see how it goes. So the terms and how valuation is done. Businesses are sold across the country based upon the money that a business produces. What we call that is owner benefit, seller's discretionary earnings, or cash flow. It is not profit or EBITDA. Profit has a specific accounting term, and as does EBITDA. Seller's discretionary earnings or owner benefit is the following. And you want to write this down. It is the profit a business produces on its tax return, the salary an owner draws, plus their payroll taxes. And remember that one. We're going to come back to that. Interest and finance charges, and depreciation and amortization charges, and any personal or one-time or non-recurring expenses that a business owner has. So those are five elements that make up the equation of owner benefit slash seller's discretionary earnings. So, why do we add back a salary of an owner? Why? Because valuation at the Main Street small business level is based upon what a working owner will do, not a passive owner. If you're going to be a passive owner, what your valuation model should run off of would be EBITDA. But the marketplace and the people you're competing with are buying based upon the profit earned by a working owner. And that buyer will be willing to pay more, frankly, for a valuation if they're going to get the salary as opposed to a passive investor. So when you're looking at Shark Tank and you see sometimes the debates between the entrepreneurs and the sharks, it generally orients around a confusion regarding what their cash flow is. The sellers are looking at it based upon what they make, and the investors are looking at it based upon what they make, and therein lies the tension. The second thing we add back to the bottom line for valuation is interest charges. Well, why do you do that? Well, you do that because everybody's interest and finance charges will be different. For example, if I have an 800 credit score and buyer B has a 400 credit score, my ability to go out and shop the investment market and the lending market to get capital is different than what they do. So what we're trying to find is the baseline, assuming there is no debt, and to calculate the ratio accordingly. The next thing we'll add back will be interest in our depreciation and amortization. We add back depreciation and amortization because that too, at the Main Street level, is basically a kiss from Uncle Sam for making the initial investment. When you buy a company, you set your depreciation schedule and you allocate the purchase price, the total purchase price, against a variety of classifications. Fixed assets can be depreciated at a certain rate and timeline, as can non-fixed assets. You'll want to talk to your accountant about what's best for you from from a tax strategy standpoint. But again, it's respective of every individual owner and every individual buyer. So when we're calculating the cash flow, we add all those fees charged back to the bottom line because A, they're variable, and B, they're really a tax planning. And so you understand this, when you buy an asset in a company, let's just say a desk, and you assign $10,000 of value to that desk, and you are depreciating it. You're not paying every year on your taxes the $2,000 over a five-year period that you put on your depreciation schedule. It's what we call a paper expense. It's not a real expense, but it's reducing your taxable income on the bottom line. So it is a owner benefit. So amortization could be done the same way. The last thing we'll add back will be the payroll taxes of an owner and then discretionary spending. Payroll taxes and salaries are also discretionary. There are times when I see tax returns that have no salary, often in an S-corp. There's debate about that, but it's kind of gray. You should draw a reasonable salary, and you have to talk to your accountant about what's the right salary to draw in relation to keeping the IRS off your back and keeping free cash flow. The payroll tax will proportionally change depending upon the salary. So we add that back to the bottom line because it is discretionary. We also add back one-time expenses or personal expenses that are run from a business. So from a benefit standpoint, if I choose to drive, like right now I'm driving a Honda and I own this Honda outright, A, because I'm smart, but B, I'm cheap. But there are plenty of people in my profession who drive really nice cars, Jaguars, Acuras, BMWs, and they carry car notes. They're writing that off as a legitimate expense. The lease payment or the mileage is a legitimate expense. And you know what? That's a personal choice. I choose to drive a Honda because it's practical and efficient, and I choose to use my dollars in other ways. But if a buyer chooses to have a $600 or a seller chooses to have a $600 car payment, and the reality is you need a $200 car payment, the difference would be adjusted back to the bottom line by a savvy broker. Other things that are added back: health benefits at the small business level. If you have a 401k, a pension, if you take a trip to Las Vegas and you have one business meeting, that's the common stuff we see. But those are discretionary. Meals and entertainment that truly aren't business related, those are things we add back to the bottom line. So that's what cash flow is and or owner benefit. Real important that you reflect on the multiples as it relates to multiples for EBITDA and multiples for owner benefit. EBITDA does not have the salary and the benefits associated with the owner. So, their multiples actually are higher than the multiple for owner benefit. But when you kind of add them up and compare, the actual price point generally comes in within range of each other, but oftentimes buyers and sellers confuse the multiple number and they apply it to EBITDA and owner benefit the same way. So what does that mean in English? It's not uncommon to see an EBITDA multiple of a 3 and an owner benefit multiple of a 2. Why? Because the baseline number we're multiplying again is higher in owner benefit than it is in EBITDA. Real important that you don't let your own inclinations lead you to a multiplier and get you confused and emotional as a seller and say, well, I should be a 3 when reality it's a 2. The other thing you need to account for is the taxes. How is it being taxed? Where is it being taxed? Are you moving the company? All those are variables that will impact owner benefit when you are a buyer. So, for example, if you're in Florida and you're buying an online business and there is no sales tax in Florida and you're moving into New York where there is a sales tax on online businesses, you have to look at that from a valuation standpoint for yourself. Again, the market will dictate because the buyers will come from everywhere. So that's a real quick, down and dirty, synopsis of what is owner benefit and what is seller's discretionary earnings and how it's used in the valuation model. Now, multiples are not static. Oftentimes I'll hear multiples thrown about by accountants and or buyers who have done rudimentary elements of research, and they hear these quote-unquote rules of thumb by sector or, you know, business category, i.e. I'm a manufacturer, I'll get a 5 multiple. That's completely, you know, nonsense. You know, valuation is an art and a science. There are about 5 to 7 legitimate valuation methodologies that are used. And obviously the seller is going to look to the one that, you know, makes them feel best and gets them the highest number. But again, the marketplace dictates. Why is it so confusing? Well, because there is no central database truly kept across the United States by valuation professionals or by business brokers to show what actual sold comps are. Now, are there databases locally here in Florida? Absolutely. Is that kind of the tomb by which things, you know, kind of bear out? Absolutely. Does it fluctuate with market conditions? Yes, it does. We can routinely run reports, and I did yesterday on a category for a CPA where the multiples on a particular category fluctuated up and down over a 5-year period based upon a couple variables. It was in the travel industry. It was reflective of the lending market because the deal was a larger deal. And the multiples swung a full point from a 1.6 all the way to a 2.6 depending upon what was happening in the lending market, because it was a larger size transaction. Cost of money goes up, multiples go down. Cost of money goes down, multiples go up. So it is not a static number, and as a buyer and seller, you shouldn't think that it is. You should understand the marketplace, gather that information as best you can about what the market is doing, and live in the marketplace, because the reality is you're not going to get the lending, and you're not going to get the deal done if you're not priced right and you don't sell right. So that's kind of a synopsis for a quick blog post. I hope it was helpful. And if you have any further questions, do not hesitate to call 321-287-0349 or visit my website and reach out to me from there. I'm at www.yourfloridabusinessbroker.com.